This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now time for The Property Show on BFM 89.9 with me, Keith Kam. Now, the one thing that we have all noticed is that property prices hardly ever seem to decline. Couple that with our salaries that never seem to rise sufficiently. Now, the government and Bank Negara, our central bank, have been doing all they can to bring some control to this situation. Property cooling measures like limiting the number of loans as well as their amount a prospective home buyer can take is just one of a few such measures. Are they working, though? Today, we speak with Jason Lim, a senior data analyst at iProperty Malaysia, to find out more. All right, Jason, take us through some of these property cooling measures that Bank Negara has imposed on the Malaysian property market.
Well, since 2010, Bank Negara, alongside the government, has taken steps and introduced various cooling measures. Among these are the 70% loan-to-value ratio for the financing of properties that was implemented in November 2010. It aims to moderate excessive investment and speculation in the market at that time. And in 2012, they issued another guideline again, requiring banks to query into their borrowers' net income instead of just looking at their gross income only. This guideline was meant to protect consumers and to keep the credit market stable.
Right.
In 2013, we saw that the loans approved for residential properties climbed. So another guideline was issued to enforce an even stricter loan-to-value ratio compared to the previous years. At the same time, they also abolished the developer interest-bearing scheme, because it was recognized as the main reason behind inflated property prices at that time.
Okay.
So in 2014, BNM also issued another guideline to curb the loan to value ratio further, for the third time actually. And they have always been actively implementing guidelines almost every year since 2010 to cool down the property market boom. So from this observation, we saw that these measures had reduced the percentage of increase in property prices every year since 2012.
Now, but what we have seen from all these implementation of measures from Bank Negara, it seems to have only just made things a little bit more inconvenient for borrowers if they want to buy property, rather than cool down property prices. Because do you not see that the results of these measures were not actually achieved?
Here's the thing. During the implementation of these measures, prices are increasing. But one thing that nobody realized is that the percentage increase of the prices has actually been falling. So the increase is actually slowing down.
Now, the prices of many property, like you said, especially residential, they keep increasing. So these assets are getting further and further out of reach for Malaysians. How bad is the situation today?
Well, I believe that the situation should become better as we are observing a slowing growth in price increase for residential properties since 2012. But I don't think people agree. Well, looking back at the housing price index all the way back to year 2000, a house that cost 200,000 then now costs more than double its original value,
mm-hmm.
right? With that in comparison, it is a difficult fact to accept for most people. Perhaps what would satisfy most, if not all, is for the price increase to slow down even further in order for income to catch up. Take for example, right? Currently, the national median price for sub-sale residential property in 2016 is slightly higher than 300,000. That translates to about 1,500 in monthly installment for a 30-year tenure.
Yes.
Right. If we were to use a monthly household income of 4,500, that installment would take up a third of that income. What's left over for the rest of the month is the gross amount of 3,000 to be set aside for other household expenditure, which may seem inadequate mm-hmm. if you live in a city and just surviving with it, right? So the question now is, are there enough houses priced below that amount, less than 300,000, to cater for households earning below 4,500?
Right.
Because otherwise, they will have to go for houses that are higher in price, which will then take up more than 30% of their income, which then reduces the gross amount set aside. for other expenditure for the month.
Now, Jason, putting aside the residential sector, which obviously have seen very little in price reduction, some sectors themselves also seem to overheat more than others. Which are those that are more affected than others?
In many economies, housing prices are subject to boom and bust cycles, and in some cases, the cycles are linked to severe economic and financial instability.
Okay.
Overheating can have both price and quantity dimension. It is likely they are also usually linked by a common driver.
Okay.
So talking about what are signs of overheating, I think one of the points that we should use to best describe our current situation is that sharp and sudden increase in property price could be a sign, but it's not a single factor that can be used to tell if the increase is a sustained trend or a genuine economic bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Such increase has to be interpreted with other measurements from the real estate. For example, if the increase in price has begun making it impossible for consumers to buy their house, then the situation becomes more and more likely like an economic bubble.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, no matter how enthusiastic the consumers are about the property market, their income sets a hard limit on how much they can spend on housing. So generally speaking, spending more than 30% of their income on housing costs could be a sign that real estate prices are too high.
In Malaysia's case, do you see a bubble?
It's quite subjective in this case. It really depends on what it means to be adequate for the person.
The rise in property prices in Malaysia, how long have you observed this happening?
Based on our latest data, mm-hmm. I am observing this for prices since 2010.
Since 2010, but it hasn't rung any alarm bells with you?
Of course there is. Price of houses actually rise the highest in 2012. But after 2012, it's actually been dropping 1% every year. What that means is that in 2013, the percentage of increase was actually at 11%. In 2014, it was 10%. In 2015, it was 8%. And 2016, last year, the percentage of increase is at 7%. So slowly you can see that, yes, the price of residential property is still increasing, but the percentage of increase is dropping each year.
This has something to do with the Bank Negara cooling measures then, to a certain extent.
Oh yes, definitely. If we look at the housing price index in 2011 and 2012, as I said, 2012, percentage of increase was the highest.
Mm-hmm.
It jumped 3% just in a matter of 1 year. But do recall earlier that when I explained about the cooling measures that Bank Negara has implemented, they already started implementing some of these guidelines in 2010.
Right.
So that was much about 2 years earlier. So in my opinion, Bank Negara measures couldn't have come in at a better time than that.
With Bank Negara's measures, prices are still going up. What else is lacking? What should Bank Negara do?
Looking at what else Bank Negara and the government can do better is to ensure better control of new development launch mm-hmm. at a rate that is sustainable, not only for the economy, the industry or the financial market, but also to safeguard our fragile environment. Let's not forget about that. It is important for a sustainable urban lifestyle. We need to understand that all this development and pursuit of profit maximization at the end of the day always come at a cost to our environment as well as towards our future generation. Overdevelopment can reduce the value or the capital the property developers have built or the government has invested in infrastructures.
Right.
Sustainable development increases quality of life and value in the long term for the next generation.
If Bank Negara didn't introduce these measures, how much worse would the situation be?
As we can see, even with these measures, prices of house is still increasing, albeit at a slowing percentage increase. While at the same time, we observe that the financial institution experienced one of the biggest drop in loans approved for residential properties in 2016. I mean, had there been no measures, a lot of loans based off overvalued properties might have gotten approved, which in turn can lead to high risk of default and excavated into other sectors that are dependent on the financial institution for a source of capital. Can the situation get much worse than that? I think yes, it can, but Bank Negara and government hopefully then will be able to implement new guidelines or new cooling measures to tackle them.
So without Magna Gara's property cooling measures, things might be even worse. In a few moments, iProperty Malaysia's Jason Lim and I will discuss some comments Governor Datuk Mohamad Ibrahim made about Malaysia's property market. BFM 89.9. This is The Property Show on BFM 89.9 with me, Keith Kam. We are talking to Jason Lim, a senior data analyst from iProperty Malaysia, exploring how effective or not Bank Negara and the government's property cooling measures have been on the real estate market. Recently, Bank Negara Governor Datuk Mohamad Ibrahim, he made some comments about Malaysia's property market. He talked about several sectors that the central bank is, you know, particularly worried about.
The property market, there are three sectors that we are concerned. One is the high-rise condominium. Second is the office space. And third, there are so many malls in Malaysia. I challenge you, you just go from the LDP, from one end of the toll concessionaires to the other end, you will find at least 19 malls. So maybe we are overbuilding the malls. So we need to be a bit more careful on those sectors. As far as exposure by the banking sector, I think they don't have excessive exposure on those sectors. We have reminded them to be careful.
So high-rise condos, office spaces, too many malls, that's what Datuk Mohamad says. Your thoughts on these issues, is he right?
Yeah, I agree with him. The malls, in my opinion, are built much too close to each other. Mm-hmm. It actually saturates the population living around them.
The fact that there are that many malls, what would you suggest that can be done to alleviate the situation? Perhaps more stringent regulations with regards to zoning?
Well, once the malls are built, they are meant to be there forever. What we can do about those malls which is already there, we probably have to be more creative on how we need to use those space for public creativity, perhaps. But as for new and upcoming malls, we definitely need to really relook into all the new launches or new plans, you know, that they plan to build. It's definitely something serious and should not be added into the market anymore.
You know, even the governor also says, like, you know, if you just drive along the LDP, he sees about 19-20 malls down the street. How bad would the situation be for the property market if this trend continues?
Well, before malls, there were parks, and people use these parks to be out of their house, where people can then socialize, network around, know their neighborhood. When you replace these parks, these green lungs of the neighborhood with malls, you get a very commercial settings.
Right.
Right. Everything is about business, marketing, ads. There is no more quality of life anymore. Sure, there is entertainment, there is shopping, but it won't be a living organism anymore.
But the interesting thing about, you know, having parks versus having malls is that it does make economic sense when it comes to developers. How do you see them balancing having more green spaces and fewer malls as opposed to what's happening right now?
When you have fewer malls, prices can increase. When you have more malls, prices actually decrease. So what they should really look at is the margin that they want to make, right? If they want to make more margin, they need to look at building less malls. If they prefer smaller margins, building more malls can decrease that.
We need to consider the occupancy rate of a lot of these malls as well. From your observation, do you see that as being a problem?
Yes, definitely. Imagine yourself walking into a mall that is almost empty, mm-hmm. right? It's not lively, it's not up to expectation, it's not where you expect to see yourself when you enter a mall, especially when you're walking around with your family. So in this case, having a park that is void of commercial entertainment is calming and soothing compared to walking into a mall that has low occupancy.
Datuk Mohamad also believes that, you know, housing affordability, affordable houses, these two issues, they are linked. And the situation is getting quite dire with Malaysian salaries, like you said earlier, not rising fast enough to allow them to own homes to live in, let alone for other investments. And this is what he says.
Housing affordability and affordable houses, I think, is linked. It's important that when we look at housing affordability, we also need to look at the demand and supply of affordable houses, the level of income of our people, and making sure that those affordable houses, the supply is on the right location. Because there are affordable houses that are not being sold because it's not located at the right place where the public would want to buy.
The governor is right about the demand and supply. If you want a cheap home, you have to forego so many things like location, you know, proximity to infrastructure. Is there a middle ground that people can work with?
I don't think there's a middle ground, and you can't always bring up the excuse of the chicken and egg reasoning. My thoughts on this is that you have to build the roads and the people will come. It's as simple as that. You just have to build the infrastructure.
Now, with government incentives, government's moves to introduce projects like PRIMA or for the Federal Territories, Rumah Whip, for example, do you see this as a long-term solution or a solution at all?
Land are getting scarce. We can build as much affordable homes as we want in the city, but we know that one day that we will run out of land.
Yes.
And eventually, it makes more sense to commercialize the land instead. Right. Because it brings in more economic benefit to the country. It benefits more people and it creates more jobs as well. But the next problem for that will be logistic. So eventually, we have to look for places. We have to live further away from the city.
Right.
But at the same time, we have to look at technology as a solution to let people travel faster to work,
right,
get to the city faster and smoother.
Now, when you talk about logistics, I assume you're speaking about connectivity as well. For Malaysia, is that a serious problem right now?
Right now, the average, the time range for people to go to work on a daily basis is about 1 to 2 hours. Personally, I think anything more than 1 hour is inefficient, right? It's an opportunity cost for everyone who is working out there. Every 1 hour that we spend on the road is 1 hour we could spend at home with our family. We can build more roads, but roads also compete with properties in terms of land.
Mm-hmm.
If when you build more roads, you take away the opportunity to build more housing. Eventually, it's more efficient to put everyone in the same transportation system. It's also cheaper that way. So what this means is that the government, in the long term, should always look at enhancing public transportation.
Mass transport.
Yes, mass transportation.
Finally, Jason, where is Malaysia's property market headed today if we are going along this current path?
Well, for the foreseeable future, prices will definitely continue to rise. It cannot go down. If it goes down, it means we are having a negative growth, especially in terms of the real estate sector. It means we are not building buildings. And when we stop building buildings, and if demand catches up, prices also will go up. So what's important is that prices grow at a pace that income can catch up. And it's good that they are still consolidating and there's still much work to be done. It's not the end of the road yet.
We have been speaking with Jason Lim, a senior data analyst from iProperty Malaysia. And now before we wrap up, here is a quick property tip. If you are buying your first home, you may be eligible for a 90% loan from the bank. Now this means you need to fork out 10% of the value of your home. That may, however, not be the case as there are other costs for which you need to set aside. These ancillary costs include stamp duties, taxes, legal fees, processing fees, and don't forget the MRTA, that's the Mortgage Reducing Term Assurance. All in all, even if you qualify for 90% financing, prepare to set aside around an additional 5% of the value of your property for these incidentals. If you've missed any part of this program, download the BFM app on both Google Play and the App Store. That's all for this week's The Property Show. Join us again next week, Friday, after the 9:30 a.m. news for more. I'm Keith Kam for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.